Hello there, and welcome to The High Ground, a doof bonus content show where we're sailing into Disney's Pirates of the Caribbean. I'm your reclusive captain, Elliot Diebold.
I'm your feisty first mate, Georgia Diebold.
And I'm still just the gross scallywag, Reuben Morehouse.
The voice is back.
It's well, back, but not for this all movie of it, just it. The start.
This movie earned it. What a film. What a almost great film.
Yes. So as we went over last month, even though it's in the episode title and even though you've downloaded the episode, apparently you still might not know what we're here to talk about. So we're here to talk about Pirates 4 on Stranger Tides. It's the fourth Pirates movie. Came out in 2011. And it's based on a book, weirdly. This is the one that was based on an existing story, not a theme park ride.
Well, yeah, this movie proves that basing films on books is a bad idea and basing films on theme park rides is a good idea.
I mean, yeah. What did we think of the movie overall before we get into it?
I mean, you know, we like to get certain things that we could just go on and on about out of the way at the start, like, you know, Attack of the Clones, we're like, let's just get out of the way. The romance sucks. I think we just need to get it out of the way here that this is a sharp decline from the other three films and move on from there.
And we can just end the episode there.
Yeah. Bye, hoy, listeners.
Yeah, that's okay. That's pretty much it. Yeah.
There's almost a good movie here. I don't know.
Yeah. I was expecting to not have that much to say about this movie, but actually, weirdly, my notes for this episode are the longest that they've ever been, because this movie sits right in that zone where it's worse than the previous three films, but inside this film there were so many things that I really, really liked that I think this could have potentially been the best of the four films, but just like some of the things they did are just so dumb.
Yeah, oh, I mean, it's really annoying. Kind of like Attack of the Clones. It's like there's some of it is very, very good or almost very good. And but then there's just some bits that you just, which again, the romance,
Yeah, it's the execution more than the concepts that really let this movie down for me. I think my other sort of big takeaway from this film was it's not that situation where there's a good film buried underneath this one. I think the problem here is that there's two good films buried under this one and they're at war, because it's like the highlights of this film for me are the times where it's just exclusively being on Stranger Tides, like the book, and the other highlights are the ones where it's just kind of being Pirates of the Caribbean. And like the times where it just starts to irk me is the parts where it's trying to be both.
We should touch on this, I think, because I didn't know this until I started getting bored during the film and looking it up. This movie is, they purchased the rights to a book called On Stranger Tides, this 1976, you know, fantasy novel. And they when they were making Pirates 2, the writers found this book and were like, oh, this could be a future Pirates film. They bought the rights to it and then eventually turned it into this movie. And the movie isn't really like heavily based on it, but this movie just has this vibe of like, hey, wait, this part's suddenly good. What's up with this? And I don't know for sure that that's because they've just taken some stuff from the book that worked well, but there's just weirdly, there's suddenly bits where you're like, wait, is this movie good all of a sudden?
I got more familiar with the book than I ever had for this episode. Like and that involves just actually reading the entire plot synopsis on Wikipedia. So I'm not like, I don't have a degree in it.
It's only four paragraphs. It's not
so you didn't long. You didn't actually read the book?
Oh, God, no. But like it's funny because I think in my head, having seen this movie years ago and knowing it was the only one that was based on a book, I had attributed a lot of the weirdness to, oh, that must have been something they lifted from the book. And what was crazy is actually finally reading the synopsis of the book, it was like, actually, all the stuff I'd attributed to being crap for the book isn't. That is just weird shit they made up for this film. And most of the parts I actually kind of liked were the bits that were taken from the book. So this is what brings me to that whole idea of there's two good films under here, because actually it turns out that I've been wrong all this time. The book actually led to some of the coolest stuff. It's like much more the original ideas trying to bridge the gap between Pirates and the book that just don't sit well.
I mean, it feels like they've tried to stuff a Pirates of the Caribbean movie into a box that doesn't quite fit it. You know, they're shoving a square peg in a round hole, and you can kind of feel it in this film with a lot of the things.
It's interesting because I didn't know any of this. I didn't know that it had a book that it was based on or any of that stuff. So I was mostly just really confused, and I thought it all just felt really a bit weird and disjointed, but I didn't really realize any of that. But it's interesting to me that the writers during the second film looked at this book and that they were the ones who kind of went down. Because is it the same writers? Because I thought a big part of it for me was that the writing just did not feel as sharp or well thought out as the other films. Like, just the characterization and the plot was way worse than the other ones. So was it actually the same writers? Like, I don't...
I think so.
Interesting.
But
they were already rich now, I see. Films,
yeah, the first four films, the screenwriters were a group called, two people called Ted Elliott and Terry Rossio, who wrote the first four movies. Obviously, Gore Verbinski directed the first three, and somebody called Rob Marshall directed On Stranger Tides. Hold on. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page for the Pirates of the Caribbean film series. There's also untitled sixth film and untitled spin-off film that are in the works.
I think we talked about those already.
They're making a new one, aren't they?
There's been no news on them since COVID started, so God knows. But they were doing one. I think they wanted to bring Johnny Depp back for one sixth one, which I think ties into what Pirates 5 is about.
That's right. Margot Robbie's attached to star in it. I forgot about that.
Which I'm so down for. I saw another rumor that they at one point they thought Karen Gillan might be.
She'd also be good.
The other potential lead, either of those two.
But great. This is something I was thinking about during the film because it's the same screenwriter. So in short, what happened, right, is the question.
Yeah, the writing felt very different, didn't it?
I think my gut is, one, I feel like Johnny Depp was probably consulted a lot more about stuff. From what I read, he was consulted on a lot of the writing stuff, and I don't necessarily want to throw shade or whatever, but, I just feel like Jack Sparrow in this film is not good.
It is a lot of the film.
It's just, I don't know. Like, he just doesn't. He shouldn't be the protagonist of this film.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
The protagonist should be the Philip, who's the missionary, because he actually has a story. And yes, it's relegated to the background in this film, and it's kind of shitty. But I feel like if they had a bigger name actor playing Philip, and they wrote around that being the protagonist, there could be a really good film here. And I'll talk about it.
Yeah, because I feel like Johnny Depp and Penelope Cruz were the two protagonists, and both of their characters were just too much to be the main character.
Way too much. Yeah.
In defense of Jack Sparrow, I still think he has a number of the best lines in the movie. Mm. It's the substance that's behind it that's gone, but all of my favorite zingers from the film are still absolutely Jack Sparrow moments.
Well, I think he works well when he's in an ensemble, but when the start of this film where Jack, we're watching Jack for 20 minutes, it's torment. It was
really hard.
That's a good point, actually, because even in the first three, he was kind of really second fiddle to Liz.
He's never solo. He's never
He
shouldn't be leading the scenes. Johnny Depp, sure, can do that in other films, but not in this film. It just doesn't work with the character.
Because even they could have almost toned down Penelope Cruz's character or something and had her as the lead, and then Jack's kind of almost the love interest. That actually maybe would have worked better. And also because I feel with her they were trying to make her a more three-dimensional, interesting character, but she didn't get enough screen time for it to work. And that if they'd made her the protagonist, her character would have worked. Because I felt very confused about her character, generally speaking. I was like, what? Who is she and why does she do anything she does? Like,
yeah.
I had no idea what she was about.
Apart from one thing, which is her thing about wanting to try and save the soul of her dad, that was really compelling to me. I thought, okay, that's actually like quite a compelling character thing.
Because it wasn't
thing.
Until like half an hour into that I realized that it was serious. Like I thought it was still a trick. I was really confused. Yeah.
We're letting this movie bring us down to its level, but we should let's structure it step by step.
I do want to say though, in terms of the like what happened with the writing and all that, I'm not too familiar with how this works with movies and stuff, and I'm sure I'll get like a strongly worded letter from Scott as I say this, because like the director has a fair amount of say on like what ends up coming out on the screen, right? Like the writers write the sort of screenplay, but I feel like directors also have a big impact on what parts of that actually sort of make it on screen, and they can
making it work. Like you can turn a bad joke into a good one with directing and editing and stuff, right? Yeah. And vice versa.
So I think like I haven't actually listened. Those of you who are listening to this as it's coming out will probably know Matt and Scott are doing Gore Verbinski, so they're covering the original Pirates trilogy right now, and I haven't listened to their episode
yet. I saw that on YouTube and I was like, what? Anyway.
But the cowards, they're not going to cover the fourth and fifth film.
Yeah. What kind of losers don't do that? I was so keen to do this, you know?
Okay, but let's get into this movie. Okay,
let's talk about the actual film. Yeah.
So we open with Gibbs being on trial for being Jack Sparrow, and then Jack impersonates a judge to kind of save him, but he fails, and then Jack is brought before the King of England, who's hilarious, and there's like this whole thing because basically the Spanish have found the Fountain of Youth, and so the King of England wants Barbossa to take Jack to the Fountain of Youth to beat the Spanish there and claim it for England, but Jack gets away, so then Gibbs does it, and like, God, this was a convoluted summary of just like a short spot of the movie.
And completely unnecessary. Like, you could cut all of this, start the movie 30 minutes in, you would have lost absolutely nothing of value. Except one thing that you would need to have kept is this movie has one of only three scenes, I think, in total that the Spanish feature in. So that's the very, very start when they find a mermaid, I think. I can't remember what they
find.
When they come back at the end, I was like, who are these people?
Yeah.
The guy in the net. They find a guy in the net who's from Ponce de Leon's ship.
Hmm. Oh, okay. Sure.
That's right.
That makes sense. Yeah. So we need that scene because the Spanish only have, I think, three scenes.
Because that was the classic dark start scene that we get in Pirates that we had. Yeah. It was the dude getting hauled up onto the deck of that ship in the middle of the night.
I'm going to jump around a bit, but I'm just, as we go through, I'm going to pitch my alternate version of this film. Imagine this is how it starts, okay? And a young, innocent missionary is on his way to see the world, and he gets on a ship, and his ship sails off, and then, you know, the start of this film is his ship getting attacked by pirates. And he's like, oh, what's going on? What's going on? Oh, pirates, pirates. Not just pirates. It's Blackbeard. And Blackbeard comes down, murders everybody on the ship, is about to murder the missionary. And then Penelope Cruz comes in and is like, wait, he needs to save your soul, blah, blah, blah. That's the setup for the film. And that would start this film off on such a great note.
Instead of having that off screen for some reason.
Because they started off with the Spanish. And the thing is, I'm going to kind of vouch for how the Spanish are used in this film. I actually like this idea of this kind of shitty Deus Ex Machina that has actually been like in front of you the whole time. Mm. But starting the very movie with them specifically kind of oversells that part. I like your idea of not having them be the very opening.
You just need a few more scenes with them. They just felt a bit.
I quite literally forgot that they were in it until they came back, and I was like,
That's actually what I like about it. Because I had the same thing. Like, they showed up, and I was like, oh, fuck, yeah, the Spanish are here. Like, I actually really like that as a reveal.
Yeah, I did like that twist, yeah.
Because, like, they just stole the cups from them. They've been here the whole movie. They just have always been in the background.
I really liked their motivation too, but we'll leave that for when we get there, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, so something to talk about with this start of the film. They're in, like, England and as mentioned, Spain and stuff, and it's just, like, this is one of those things. I thought that was from the book, but it's not. Like, the book actually just starts in the Caribbean, and the main character is French, so none of this stuff is from the book. And I just, like, why are they in England? Like, why are the British involved? It's odd.
In the book, the Fountain of Youth is in Florida as well, which I liked when I was reading about the plot summary. But yeah, I don't know. There are some really weird choices in here, and I thought we could blame them all in the book, but we can't.
Yeah,
like the book has the Fountain of Youth, and that's a similarity. And I think, like, voodoo is a big element in the book, so presumably that's where Blackbeard's voodoo comes from. But other than that, I actually didn't see that much that came out of the book into this film.
Yeah, I guess just sort of what confuses me is something that I found really difficult with this film was, well, this England thing is a big example of it. Everyone's just kind of in England for different random reasons. And that's, like, wild when that it's like a 6-month journey from the Caribbean or some shit. Like, just the idea that, like, Gibbs is here because he heard Jack was here. Jack's just here randomly. There's the imposter Jack because, yeah, Blackbeard's here. Barbossa's shown up. Like, it's all just a bit, like,
thought of that. It's a lot of people to have just happened to, who've, like, never been to London before turn up.
Yeah, and I know this is, like, nitpicky nonsense, but, like, I guess the reason it stood out to me was because the movie spends a little bit of time connecting itself to the end of Pirates 3. But for me, it was just enough time connecting it to that it just made the parts that didn't make sense more obvious. Like, I actually think they would have been better off connecting less with the previous film and just being like, we're all here now, because it's like, you either got to explain the whole thing or just explain none of it. But they walked into this weird middle ground where I was like, I don't get it.
I don't understand why we had to go to England at all. That could have just not been in it.
Could have been Elizabeth's dad, like, doing
he died.
The king's role.
Didn't he?
Oh, yeah, good point.
Yeah.
It's like, did I forget that?
No, he did die, but he should have been the king. And also, Barbossa shouldn't have been in this film. It should have been Norrington, who also shouldn't have died.
It's actually set in heaven.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Because, I mean, faith is clearly a big theme of this film. You've got the missionary, you've got the Spanish. Fuck it, set it in heaven. Why not?
I don't know. I just, like, I just found it a bit weird that everyone was in England, and they touched on it just enough that I was like, you just shouldn't have bothered. But also, this scene with Jack where he's escaping from the king is really interesting, because I really wanted to give them points at the start, because they sort of try to show up how Jack sets up one of his, like, elaborate Rube Gold machine escape sequences. But I like it as it was being set up, and then actually seeing it happen, I was just like, I don't like this.
It kind of, I think in this movie, like, we've always commented how there's a lot of, like, silly flying around in Pirates of the Caribbean, like, on ropes and stuff. And it got sillier. Like, I think it really came to a head when they, like, flew off the ship at the end of the third one. But this really just felt like it went from sort of silly fun to, like, is Jack a Jedi? Like, what is, like,
oh my
some
God,
of the,
we found it, the link.
Jumping and flips and shit. I was like, what the, this was like, he's like superhuman now. It was a little bit, I think it just crossed the silly line maybe a little bit. And maybe that's why it didn't feel like it quite landed.
For me, crossing the silly line, like, oh, it's probably happened a few times before, but it's really the bit with the palm trees later in the movie, where Jack flings himself between the palm trees. I was just like,
oh, that's
palm
on.
I was actually lolling. I was like, this is, I think it's because the other ones were, when it went a bit over the top, but it was really creative. Like, it was, you know, when we're talking about, like, in the second one, like, where they're climbing up the thing in the circle cages at the Cannibal Island and some of the, and, like, when they're in the spinning wheel, like, it's a bit far-fetched and superhuman, I guess, but, like, there's a sort of element of creativity to the scene that's, like, really visually interesting that makes it work, or that you can look past it. Whereas this one, he was just swinging on some chandeliers or whatever. Like, it wasn't very creative, I guess.
Yeah. I feel like my gut feel on this was Jack Sparrow is not Like, he's not a Joker-esque character where he sets up these elaborate plans and they all play out meticulously, right? He's a he improvises and things just kind of seem to go his way. And in this banquet scene, he's, like, setting shit up from, like, from the first moment. He's, like, dropping drop a tea towel over here so that later somebody will slip on and blah, blah, blah. And, like, it was too much.
Yeah. It's like there's no possible way.
He's not Pintessa,
But then he's riding – yeah, exactly. Thank you, Elliot. But then he's when he's riding on the, like, coal cart and that catches on fire, he's like, oh, shit, I can fling burning coal at people. Like, that's Jack's – that's, like, improvisational, making use of his surroundings. Not, like – he didn't intend to set a coal cart that he was riding on fire. It just kind of happened, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right, because the second half did work for me. Once he got out of the room, like, with the banquet hall, I found myself having a lot more fun. So
yeah, I didn't mind the pirate movie car chase on land.
Yeah.
It was unexpected, but it worked okay.
Yeah, so I think I agree with you, Ruben. I like that interpretation where it's like making him into a schemer isn't actually how Jack works. Like, because it's that joke from like the first movie. I think it was the first movie where it was like, do you think he plans it all out or it just sort of happens? Mm. And I guess the fourth film answers that question for us. The answer is it needs to be improv.
Yeah, he shouldn't plan it all out because it doesn't work.
One last aside from this section. On the way out, Jack steals an earring from Judi Dench. And I find this confusing because why would you only take one earring? They're not worth anything individually.
Yeah. Who knows? Doesn't come up. You know, it's a perfect example of something the original films did great, which is make all those things tie together again, whereas this film just kind of does them arbitrarily and they never amount to anything. We're about to see Jack's dad again, who is maybe a ghost, but it doesn't really matter because he never shows up again, so who cares?
Yeah, it was weird.
You say that about the earring, and I was about to say, oh, no, it just, you know, shows that he's a pirate and he steals stuff, and that's fine. That's all it needs to be. But I'm just realizing there's a scene later where he breaks out of the, like, handcuffy things when the Spanish capture them.
Oh,
and if he'd used the earring for that, that would have just been
I thought
like,
you were about to say he did use the earring, and I was like, oh my god, am I giving this film no credit when it deserves it? And then he didn't. Why did I ever think that?
I wish he had.
I also just have written down here in my minimal notes that Jack dressed as a judge is the most ridiculous thing ever. That was really stupid. He's got this like heavy eyeliner. It was a really dumb start to the movie.
And can I also point out, much like a lot of Jack's plans or the plans of characters in this film in general, it doesn't go anywhere. Why is he doing this? Why does he? So first of all, was he arrested at some point? So if so, how did Gibbs get in his place? And if not, why did he contrive this scenario for Gibbs to be arrested for being him to then break him out? But then it didn't work. Like, or just break him out normally instead of doing this weird impersonating a judge plan. Like,
his plan, I think his plan actually kind of made sense. Like, because his whole thing was the impersonating the judge bit is a bit weird. But, like, the core part of his plan was actually that he paid off the carriage driver. And then we get the little thing where we find out the, like, British police just paid that driver off even more.
Sure.
I quite like that part of it. But, yeah, I'm not going to try and defend impersonating the judge. It's clearly written from, like, the reveal part because, it's like, here we have Jack Sparrow and they take it off and it's Gibbs and you're like, ha, 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 and then the judge starts walking and you don't see their face and you're like, oh, okay, well, then this is Jack.
Yeah.
And it's like they've written it around that moment and the rest of it doesn't quite hold up.
But he just looks so silly.
To be fair, that look, like that's the British judge look, you know, like those wigs just look silly.
Yeah, but I think it was with his eyeliner and his teeth and everything. It's just like, I don't know. Maybe lots of people had gold teeth back then. I wouldn't know.
So having escaped and not really succeeded in any of his plans so far, Jack runs into his dad, who gives him some advice and then disappears mysteriously. And so then he's able to confront the person who has been impersonating him and hiring a crew in his name. And it ends up being his long-lost love, Angelica. The two of them fight some British police, and then they escape, and Angelica sort of kidnaps Jack to take him aboard her ship.
I did like the bit where she's where he's like, why would you impersonate me? And she's like, well, I thought it was the only person that I could get away with impersonating. Like, that wasn't bad. A good joke. Yeah.
Again, why is she doing this again? Doesn't really make sense.
It doesn't make any sense. And it doesn't really get explained.
Well, okay.
Okay, Elliot, I dare you to explain this go. And make it consistent. Because keeping in mind that, one, some of her crew members knew she was faking, and two, she's Blackbeard's daughter. So what?
See, yeah. That first bit is what really got me, because at first I thought it was because she had, like, no power or something and so needed to get respect. But then when she dropped the facade of being him, all of her crewmates were just like, oh, hey, and they still, like, they knew that she was pretending, so I was just really confused.
No, okay, so my understanding of this, and this is based on a lot of thinking after the film, because it did not come to me during the film. So, okay, first of all, she's recruiting this crew for Blackbeard, but, like, Blackbeard's notoriously terrible. So, you can't openly recruit as Blackbeard because he's, like, wanted and nobody
and people wouldn't want to work for him. He's got bad work, you know, workplace conditions.
So she needs to say she's hiring for someone else. And then I think the other side of it is, like, this is meant to be an expendable crew. Like, Blackbeard has his zombified crew and they're, like, the main thing, but they need, like, people to sacrifice to the mermaids and, like, all this other shit. So I think they're explicitly hiring. It's like exactly what Jack did in, I think it was, like, Pirates 2 for Davy Jones, where he was hiring a crew of people who he's going to sacrifice to Davy Jones.
I see. So, like, they're being hired under Jack's name, but her crew still knows that she is not Jack.
Well, yeah, so that's the part that's a bit confusing to me, is the people like Scrum, best name, by the way.
Yeah.
Scrum seems like he's one of these people who was hired under the fake Jack Sparrow stuff, but he is so immediately on board with everything being Blackbeard by the time that Jack wakes up on the ship. That I just have to attribute that to him being an idiot, I guess. I don't have a better explanation than that.
Yeah, God knows. I don't think it makes sense because, one, there's parts where they actually don't think Blackbeard is the captain, right? So if anything, they could just lie, you know.
Well, no, that's just because I haven't seen it. But, like, they believed it until Jack made them not believe it.
And the other thing to note is, Jack mentions that he's being kept here against his will. So it's not like they needed to hire crew members. They could have just, like,
kidnapped them.
Ransacked a ship and forcefully recruited anybody.
I mean, now,
but to give praise to this film, Scrum is great and also is the only character introduced in this film that makes it into the next film. I was looking up. Scrum survives the culling of every character introduced in this film.
That's good. I like Scrum. Okay, but yeah, so I guess jumping back a bit, I just want to call out, because it's our first fighting set piece, which is where, like, Jack fights with Angelica. And I quite liked it at first, just because she's still in her Jack Sparrow disguise and you don't know who it is. And there's a bit of, like, a fun gimmick to how she's, like, intentionally mimicking him like, irritate him. It sort of falls flat towards the end, just because I don't feel like it feels as quick and dynamic as the sword fights in the first three films. And then also, by, like, the second half of the fight, I was like, I don't know which one's actually Jack Sparrow anymore. Like, it was like watching a Transformers movie again. I was like, I don't know which one I'm rooting for anymore. But, like, the start is very fun. I
forgot that about the Transformers films. You'd be like, which is the good robot and which is the bad robot?
There's a moment. My favorite part of this fight scene was there's a Donkey Kong moment. Do you all know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, where she drops the barrels on him.
Angelica throws barrels. She climbs up this little structure and legitimately, I'm pretty sure it's intentionally a reference to Donkey Kong, starts picking up barrels and rolling them down a ramp at Jack Sparrow. And he kind of jumps over them. And I swear for a moment I saw 100 points pop up when he jumped over. Anyway, it was very funny. Oh, and this fight, okay, God, fuck this movie. Every scene in it, I have so many things I want to talk about. This this fight scene ends with just, like, suddenly there's a trap door that they go out of, okay, which doesn't make any sense because it's not like they've teleported anywhere. The people that were chasing them could just, like, go outside and catch them, but whatever, they don't, that's fine. But Scrum is there and he gets captured. He's, like, getting like accosted by the English, and he's like held in handcuffs or whatever. And so I'm like, oh shit, Scrum's captured. That sucks. But at least they got away. And then Scrum's just there in the next scene. And I'm like, what happened?
Well, I hadn't even noticed that.
Me either.
Oh, yeah.
So many things.
So he escaped the English only to then be captured by Blackbeard.
You know what? I think actually Jack had to go back and impersonate a different judge and get him free.
Get free Scrum.
Okay, wait, I've got to go back to the judge scene at the start again, because isn't there a moment where Jack's like, you're guilty of being innocent?
Yeah. Oh, it's so bad. Like, fuck, it's so bad. So, yeah,
that whole scene was really stupid.
It's atrocious. What a twist, though. Guilty of being innocent, Jack, you got me.
Yeah, he pulls like fucking super basic like practitioner word switcheroo on people and they all just accept it. For no reason.
Also, I'm pretty sure the law throughout all of these films has been that piracy is like a crime for which the penalty is death. Yeah, and then he just walks in and goes,
piracy.
Oh, you are, isn't he? God, I'm not going to lie. I probably stopped paying attention at that point.
He's found guilty of being innocent.
Anyway.
Jack Sparrow.
It's like he just goes, oh, so well, yeah, we're not going to hang him. We're just going to send him to the Tower of London forever. And everybody's booing him, but they just do it even though it's not according to the law and it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. I mean, there is a bribe shown to be going to some of the people there. Yeah, but
But then they're like, who is that? And they're like, innocent. I don't know. I don't recognize him.
I didn't like it.
Stop playing devil's advocate.
They're on Blackbeard's ship, and then Blackbeard, it turns out, is Angelica's father. You don't think he is at first, but then he actually is.
Very weird. Doesn't make a lot of sense why, but whatever. It's
a classic example of the way this movie just sort of does something, and then when it finishes up with it, you're just left there at the end being like, why have you done it this way? Like, it was so clunkily delivered for me that I remember the first time I saw this, I spent, like, the next half hour of the movie unsure whether I was meant to believe she's actually his daughter or not.
That's how I felt, too. I think they were trying to recapture, like, from the first movies, all the, you know, like, sort of, like, you know, like, surprises and plot twists and, like, people, you know, randomly tricking each other. But it just kind of didn't make any sense, and I was just really confused.
Well, yeah, and because like the reason it hurts you is like that next half hour of the movie actually kind of hinges on you believing that Angelica cares for her father, and you just don't, because you don't know if she actually is or not. You're just kind of confused who she's playing.
Yeah, exactly. Like
they set her up as this master manipulator, and then the reveal is, oh, but she wasn't actually really doing any of that. I mean, the one part of this that I do really like is that moment where Jack's like, wait, so you lied to me by telling the truth? That's great. Can I use that? Like, I enjoy that one line. That one response almost justifies the whole thing to me.
Yeah. It was just very confusing because I think she was set up as being like a Jack-style character who was all like tricky and, like, you know, manipulative and, you know. And
out for herself.
Yeah, out for herself. And then they just sort of, it was like, oh, no, actually she's more of like a, you know, Lizzie or
a Will Turner kind of type. Daughter. Yeah.
Yeah, she's actually more that type. But they didn't, like, give us any, like, warning. And so then you just spent the whole time being like, I can't tell if she's for real. I have no idea what's going on and I have no idea what her motivation is.
Yeah, that's right. They explicitly introduce her as being like Jack. She's literally impersonating him to begin with. And so it kind of really establishes in your head that she's ultimately out for herself. And so then you spend this half an hour sort of catching up to the idea that, no, actually she's just a devoted daughter and helping her dad, because that's kind of the opposite of how they've introduced her to start.
And I think like we kept saying in the other films that the whole reason why all of the like tricky plot stuff worked was because at the heart of it all, you always knew what the character's motivation was.
Yes.
Whereas with her, I spent the whole time being like, I don't understand who this lady is or what she wants.
I kept really expecting confused. Another twist where she'd be like, actually, I'm here to betray you, you know?
Yeah, and then it kind of came and I was like, happened. Oh. Yeah.
But yeah, so I actually do, though, really love the moment where Jack wakes up and finds out he's on the Queen Anne's Revenge. I feel like that reveal is very fun because Scrum is like, you're on the Queen Anne's Revenge, mate. And like for a second, I was like, oh, fuck, I've heard that name before. Like, what is that? And then they sort of spell out it's Blackbeard's. And I don't know, it's like a nice, unique moment for the series where you're just like, oh, shit, like Blackbeard. Like, that's a pirate.
Big brand recognition.
Yeah. I've heard of that guy is what I thought.
And then, like, when he does show up, his beard is, like, constantly on fire. That was just a little detail.
He lives up to the hype. Blackbeard is great.
Yeah.
His voodoo in this is, like, a very interesting kind of different feel. Like, he is both very physically imposing but also, like, clearly very magically imposing. He's doing, like, voodoo dolls and, like, you know, doing some classic voodoo to Jack. He's controlling, like, the rigging of ships with his sword. And you're just like, shit, this guy's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think they build him up as a villain and then really actually deliver on it. He's actually genuinely like cutthroat and stuff. But yeah, so Jack wakes up on this ship. He sort of tries and fails to lead a mutiny there. Doesn't work. And then he learns that Blackbeard has been prophesied to die and he doesn't want to do that. So they're going to the Fountain of Youth to kind of let him have more life.
I do like the bit where Jack's trying to set up the mutiny and he's like, how do you know that this really is the Queen Anne's Revenge? And that one guy's like, ah, oh, because I saw it written on the ship. It's just like.
Classic.
I just found that really scrum? Funny.
That's a scrum moment.
It is
moment.
Scrum.
Yeah.
We have to also give a shout out to the second of the three scenes that the Spanish are in. Barbossa is sailing to the fountain. They kind of are sailing past each other. And even though they're racing against each other, they don't shoot each other because it'll slow them down, but they're racing each other, so that's fine. I mean, if you shoot somebody and blow up their ship, it doesn't really matter if you slow them down if you're the one they're racing against.
Because if they knew that they were racing, I guess Barbossa maybe knew that Jack was going for it as well, but I guess I don't know why the Spanish didn't attack the British.
The confusing part is that somehow Blackbeard's ship is in first place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much would it actually slow you down to fire your cannons? They already had the cannons loaded. It's just like put some fire on the cannon and then the cannon does all the work. You don't need to like, you don't have to stop and engage them in combat. Just fucking shoot your cannons as you drive past them. Do a drive-by.
Yeah, cannon. That's true.
I don't know. I like this because I love this idea of what they're doing with the Spanish, which is they keep reminding you they're in the film and then letting you forget. But I 100% agree that it doesn't make sense that the Spanish just ignore them for some reason and just go on. Everything to do with the Spanish feels like they came up with what they wanted to do with the Spanish, which is the ending, which is the part that works and is cool.
Yeah.
And then they've just kind of sprinkled them into the earlier parts of the movie in ways that just don't quite make sense. That said, this scene on Barbossa's ship is 100% worth it because he's eating a plate of very fancy sliced apple. And that was, like, no joke, one of my favorite little moments in this film. Yeah. Like, it's just...
He's earned
because,
them.
Of course, that's what he's going to do with this power. He's become a privateer. King George has given him a ship. He's going to eat slices of apple on fancy china.
But, yeah, like, he's not biting into an apple like the rough pirate he used to be. No, he's eating a cut-up apple with a knife and fork because that's who he is now.
We haven't really talked about Barbossa's new role, but it's very – I actually don't mind it. I think it's very funny.
Yeah,
I do wish it was Norrington, but I guess if they had to bring Barbossa back, it makes sense.
I have a rant on it somewhere later in the notes, so I guess get ready for that.
Yeah, prepare yourselves, everybody.
Also, can we talk about – so this is jumping back a bit. Blackbeard has the zombified pirates. And at first, this is one of those things where I was like, that just felt like the writers sat down and they're like, okay, we've done ghost pirates, we've done sea monster pirates, zombie pirates. But then, this is actually one of the things they took from the book. Like, this is not something that they just made up for the movie. Like, that was so wild to me that actually zombified pirates is, like, actual Blackbeard voodoo stuff from the novel.
Yeah, that's interesting. Also, because they kind of just like threw them in there for about 5 seconds and never really dove into them at all.
They didn't have enough to do, did they?
There's the quartermaster who gets a bit of screen time, but like I would have loved to see more of the zombie-fied pirates because they're clearly still individuals.
Because I know zombies are a Caribbean thing and all that. So it's like, are they actually like supposed to be raised from the dead, or are they like lobotomized or something? I was a bit unclear on exactly what the zombification was, and I'd be interested to know. I guess
having like very briefly read about some of this stuff in the context of like other works of fiction that touch on voodoo, I think it's close to that, where you sort of like bring someone back from the dead, but their like mind and their soul doesn't fully come back.
Yeah, that's the vibe it gave me as well.
Yeah, I think that's what's happening here. Although obviously this story peppers in its own thing on top of that, which is some of them get like magical powers. So the quartermaster can see the future, and he's the one who prophesized the death of Blackbeard.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And so Blackbeard kills some dude with his flamethrower shit.
Oh, yeah. I thought for a second he was going to ram that person. Yeah. I was like, holy shit, this is awesome. He's put that person in a boat, and then he's going to ram them with the Queen Nan's Revenge. No, then a flamethrower came out, and it was kind of
like, it was really stupid, but I liked it.
Yeah, true. Yeah,
I was genuinely like, I was like, what? Oh, they're like, oh, what's going to happen? Like, what? And then in the flamethrower, whoa. I wasn't expecting that.
I was like, this is stupid. I don't care in the slightest. and this is where the missionary gets sort of first properly introduced. And I like kind of immediately was just like, oh, this character rules.
Yeah, I didn't mind him. Does he have a name, or is he just the missionary? Couldn't remember.
And I will take this opportunity to restate my missionary position, which is I think he should be the protagonist.
Yeah, I think if you'd made him a little bit more interesting and prominent, I would agree with that. And
hire a more well-known actor.
Make him French. Make him French for some reason, because it's in the book.
Yeah. I mean, like, I get it. He's just the Will Turner of this story.
100% he is.
But they didn't make him as fun and interesting as Will.
No, I think that's essentially what Ruben is suggesting. Yeah. Make him the Will Turner of this film.
Exactly.
So, wait, do it. Yeah. I think my last note from this section was just that Jack does his mutiny after 8 p.m., which we learnt last month. Is a big no-no for piratehood.
It is past pirate bedtime.
I forgot we talked about the pirate code.
Yeah, the pirate Big Dog has told everyone to go to bed at that point.
Big Dog. Mm-hmm.
Hey, so can we take a brief intermission here? Because I was looking up on the Pirates of the Caribbean wiki, and I'm going to tell you the name of this character, and I want you all to try and guess who it is, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The name of the character is Jimmy Legs.
Jimmy Legs.
Jimmy Legs. Don't look it up, because I'm going to send you a picture of Jimmy Legs in a moment.
Is he just one of the guys who was involved in the mutiny? Like one of the guys who has two lines? I'll tip my hand.
He wasn't in this film. He was in one of the previous three films.
Oh.
God.
Is it like a celebrity heads? Can I ask, like, is Jimmy Legs a pirate?
Jimmy Legs. I mean, you should kind of be able to tell from the name, Georgia, to be honest. Yes, Jimmy Legs is a pirate. That's not his Christian name, though.
Yeah, okay, fair. Okay, is he a human pirate, or is he one of the aforementioned other subcategories of pirate?
Ooh, this is a good question. Jimmy Legs, well, let's just say Jimmy Legs used to be a human pirate.
Okay.
Is that going to be like the weird guy who was in like in the walls?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was just thinking. Who didn't have any legs.
So let me show you all a picture of Jimmy Legs. This is what Jimmy Legs looks like. I've just messaged it to you both.
He's not going
to
have any legs. He's
a real fucking weird looking character. He's a fish man. He's one of the fish men from Davy Jones's Pirate.
Oh, he was like one of the main ones.
He's the bosun. He's like the second in command.
His eyes are terrifying.
So he's like a creepy, scary fish man. Listen at home, look up Jimmy Legs. Why is he called Jimmy Legs? It's such an ill-fitting name for this character. I thought this was hilarious.
Well, he probably got it before he turned into a
actual birth name. Why not? I know people called Jimmy Legs.
Wait, people plural?
Yeah.
Okay.
Multiple people.
Okay, so back to Pirates 4. So Jack kind of learns what the ritual for the fountain actually is. Quick sidebar here. A huge part of this ritual is that it needs to specifically be these two chalices from Ponce de Leon's ship, which makes no sense because how did people do the ritual before that dude went and found it? Like, I don't.
Yeah, I'm really confused about that.
So nitpicking aside.
Maybe it doesn't need to be the chalices and everyone's just wrong about that. Maybe you can just do it with any two cups. Wrong. And everyone was like, oh, no, it has to be these special chalices.
Oh, what if Ponce de Leon was worried somebody else was going to beat him? So he just got two cups and he's like, hey, these are special cups that you need for the ritual.
And no one ever thought to check. Yeah.
They're like, oh, yeah, sure, yeah.
Just so everybody else would run around trying to make their own cups or something and he could just get a head start. Queen Anne's Revenge, they're in the lead and they managed to get to Whitecap Bay, which is where this place is first. And so they capture a mermaid. Barbossa and the Spanish are somehow behind. It's wild that the Spanish are in last place, frankly. And so everyone ends up on foot going for the fountain. Jack gets separated to go find the special cups. It gets a bit messy here, but mostly I just want to talk about the mermaid scene because, like, it's fucking incredible. Like, the plan that Blackbeard has here is a bit nonsense, but terrible the plan. Scene itself is fucking incredible.
Yeah, their plan was basically just to get all the crewmates eaten in the hope that a mermaid would swim into a net that's just kind of drifting around, which is obviously stupid. Yeah. But the actual mermaid scenes, like, the mermaids I found very enticing as monsters. Like,
yeah,
the kind of ephemeral siren nature of them I thought worked really well. And then there's that moment where one of the mermaids, like, free willies out of the water and just, like, full-on tackles someone from the boat that they're in into the water and eats them. And I'm just like, fuck, this is awesome.
Yeah, they do such a good job of, like, playing innocent little mermaids and then just fucking people up the second they can. It's great.
Yeah,
it's very fun.
It was very much similar to Sinbad, though, which I've probably seen a lot more often as a kid. So I was a little bit like, is this just Sinbad?
Well, I mean,
but it was still very cool.
The idea of siren mermaids is obviously not really unique to either of those things. But
Yeah,
I remember thinking the same thing, like when they flew off the edge of the world at the start of Pirates 3.
Yeah,
I legitimately was expecting them to do the thing with the sails that they do in Sinbad. Then I was like, oh, no, wait, that's a different movie.
Yeah.
There's a lot of overlap between the shenanigans they pull in these films and in Sinbad.
Oh, I've got to rewatch Sinbad. We could do Sinbad at the end of this.
Yeah, can we do? Ruben, have you seen Sinbad?
I don't think so, no.
George, I don't think it's a very popular movie.
No, probably not. It's got Brad Pitt in it, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. I can't remember who else.
We'll do Sinbad.
They're all famous actors.
Yeah. It's very good. It's a very good animated film.
2003 as well. That's around the time of Pirates of the Caribbean, isn't it?
The first one. Pretty close, yeah.
I'm just going to really quickly just read out to you the cast because I have a feeling that it's surprisingly good. Oh, hang on. Technical difficulties. Okay,
Mark, who have we got here? Dan Elliott.
We've got Brad Pitt as Sinbad. Catherine Zeta-Jones, Michelle Pfeiffer, Joseph Fiennes, and it kind of goes downhill from there.
Well,
they're big names.
Yeah,
I remember really
big names.
Let's add that one to the list of movies we're gonna do. But for now, back to the ship that is balancing funny because Jack goes to that ship to find the cops, and Barbossa's there, and they chat and they balance around on the ship. And then it turns out to have all been pointless because the Spanish already have the cups. So then they go to the Spanish and they steal the cups and they talk about their shared ex, which is the Black Pearl. And they hatch an evil scheme, which involves Jack giving the cups to Blackbeard. Any nice things to say about this balancing scene on the ship?
So the balancing scene, the nicest thing I can say about it is, it could have been a good set piece, I think, but it was just, like, too confusing. Like, it didn't make sense how it worked. And because of that, you know, because these are interior shots inside the ship where it's tilting, right? You see a few exterior shots to set it up, but then when you're inside, they'll just kind of run to one side or the other and everything will tip towards that side. But it didn't really kind of make a lot of sense. And so that meant that my suspension of disbelief on it was kind of fucked and the scene didn't really land at all.
Yeah, there's no consistency in how their movement maps to the thing swinging.
I'll be honest with you, this is where my attention dipped. I have very little memory of this. I can't remember this scene very well at all.
And sorry, I was very unclear on one part. So there's a part where they touch this map and then Ponce de Leon's skeleton, does it just move because it was
touched?
Or is it like alive and haunted and shit? Like what is going on there?
Cool. Again, could have been cool. Didn't really make sense.
Okay. As long as it's not just me missing something. I just found that very okay, yeah. So this is where my rant on Barbossa is in the notes. Because in general, in this film, at this point, I was finding myself mad about all the characters who were just suddenly missing, like Pintel and Rigetti, you know, where are my boys? And
should we pause? Because I saw something in the Wikipedia page for this movie where Pintel and Rigetti were originally supposed to make an appearance, but director Rob Marshall opted out of the idea as he feared their roles would be cut, which is weird because Scrum is effectively the Pintel / Rigetti character. So they could have just been where Scrum was in the film and it would have been fine. And also the director surely would be able to like make the decision about whether they're cut or not. I don't really understand that at all.
I get the idea of not putting a character in case they get cut. So you just definitely cut them. Does that make any
sense? Yeah, true. Yeah. That doesn't make sense, does it?
No. Yeah,
fulfilling the prophecy. Yeah, I actually really like the idea of Pintel and Rigetti being the Scrum because just the idea that, like, the Black Pearl got taken by Blackbeard and Barbossa had to cut his own leg off and everyone else died and somehow, like, those two fuckers joined Blackbeard's crew.
Yeah, those two were the ones who was like, you know what? I respect these two.
That is hilarious. I wish that was true.
It'd be so funny if Jack woke up and there's just the two of them.
Yeah.
Hi.
Oh, that would have been so good.
That would have been so good.
Okay, yeah. So to get back to Barbossa, I found myself, the characters who weren't in this, I was annoyed that they were missing. And then for most of the other characters who were in it, I was kind of annoyed at what they did to them. Like at first I hated what they'd done to Barbossa because it was like, you know, it felt like him being a privateer for the crown was like the exact opposite of what everything he stood for.
That's why I liked it because I think you knew right from the start that there was something else behind it. Like there was no way that he was genuinely just devoted to the king.
Well, I don't think I did give the movie that credit at the start, and that was my fault. Because this scene where he talks to Jack about like when Blackbeard took the ship and what he had to do to get out, I was actually like, oh, like you can sort of see there's this like Barbossa here who was just fucking horrified by what Blackbeard did to his ship, like took control of the ropes and everything, and it kind of shook him to his core. So he cut his leg off and like ditched like literally everything else his life has been about, like going down with the ship, being a pirate captain, and he just like wanted to remove Blackbeard from the world. And again, like, it's just the tale of this movie is I don't think that interpretation is really explicit in the film. You can kind of dig it and like fan headcanon it for yourself if you want to, but like I don't know, just like the execution just wasn't really there. Like I feel like that is the interesting interpretation, but like all the movie presents is just like, I don't know, he got his leg chopped off, he didn't have anything else going for him, so he turned to a privateer, and like that doesn't make sense for the dude who like literally gave everything in the third film to like release Calypso so pirates could still be pirates, you know? Like it's that disconnect between who he was in movie 3 and this one doesn't get the time it needs to really land properly, I don't think.
And you've got Jeffrey Rush in the role, who's like such a good actor.
Yeah.
Anyway, wasted.
Yeah, especially like I guess I'm also thinking now you kind of really have to sell that there's something about Blackbeard's magic that really upset him to his core, because like you gotta remember, this dude's not going to be freaked out by magic. He was like brought back from the dead by the sea goddess who he then released. Like magic doesn't upset him. So there's got to sort of be something more to it, that like something about Blackbeard shook him to his core, and whatever that is just doesn't land in the film. I'm sure there's a way to make it do it though. Like that's what's frustrating about most of this film to me, is it's like you could make this work really well.
I don't know what they tried to imply, that it was the idea of him turning his own ship against him. They kind of mentioned that, which I'm assuming was sort of meant to be that extra thing that, you know, really freaked him out.
Well, it's kind of a shitty trope, but there's a lot of like implied darkness to Blackbeard and to his magic. And honestly, for me, it would have been enough if they just kind of went with, this is, you know, bad dark magic or what, you know, whatever the fuck. Like, and you know, that like Barbossa was just like, fuck everything else I stand for. This needs to be removed from the world or something.
Yeah, I could see that.
Anyway, yeah. So, it's such a shame because I feel like I've really grown to appreciate what they were trying to do with Barbossa. It just doesn't quite feel like it landed. And that sucks because it's probably one of the more interesting character differences they have in this movie.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know what it was about Barbossa. He just didn't quite land for me in this film.
Yeah.
I think, except for that bit where he hits an apple with a knife. Yeah. That bit was fucking dope.
I think, again, it's almost like he needed maybe a little bit less screen time.
Mm. Yeah,
or maybe more.
Him being in the lead of that group of pirates of the English sailors. It just didn't quite land. I guess
with his silly pirate accent.
Yeah,
it's just another part of the movie that falls into that awkward middle ground of they explain just enough of what happened between Pirates 3 and 4 that you really notice how much it doesn't add up.
Yeah.
Like they either needed to tell us more or tell us less, but I think the amount they told us just kind of leads you to be a bit confused. But anyway, moving on, the newly named Serena gives the gang a tear when she cries out of relief because Philip is actually still alive. And this is the one part of this whole romance arc that I actually really that twist is great.
Yeah, it landed pretty well, didn't it?
Yeah, but. In general, I think Philip and Serena's romance makes me long for the days of Will and Liz in movies 2 and 3. It's even worse.
The bit where Philip is like, she has a name, and everyone's like, what, does she? And then he's just like, Serena.
Yeah, I love that. It's like,
wait, did you just name her? Like, shit.
It was so weird because it's like, she has a name, but he hasn't even asked her what her name is. So he's been just
ask if he can give her one.
Did she not have one?
I guess like, not. Or
she was just like, I like that. Yeah,
just something else. Her name's probably just something else that he never fucking asked. And then he's just like, the ultimate expression of male privilege is like.
He just starts calling her that for the rest of the movie. She hasn't told me
her name. I don't know her name, so therefore she doesn't have a name yet, and I shall name her.
Yeah.
He gets man and also white person.
He gets one point for wanting recognition that she should have a name. And a negative a million points for deciding to give her one.
But also he's like criticizing them like she has a name, like, but he himself hasn't asked. Exactly. I was like,
must have cut a scene where they introduced themselves to each other because it's so fucking weird and clearly like a psychopath thing to do. Like they can't have just unironically made him name her. It's so weird.
I paused for a second here because I was like, why did he just do that?
Because he doesn't ask her. Like the normal thing to do is be like, hey, oh yeah, do you have a name?
Well, you don't call everybody out for not knowing your name when you haven't asked your fucking self. Like, that's just unbelievable. the weirdest movie. It's like the sort of thing that somebody would post on Reddit and be like, I did the weirdest thing the other day. I panicked. Yeah. I panicked and I named them. Yeah. And she's like, she just rolls with it too, which is also weird.
Yeah,
she's extremely like...
I get the opposite of a strong female protagonist.
I feel like one of those Reddit posts where he's like, is this chick into me? I gave her a name and now she's just using it. What's that about?
Like, does that mean she likes me?
Yeah. In general, their relationship is a fucking mess. Like worse than Will and Liz. But yeah, I got the moment where Penelope Cruz plays them so that they get the tear of like relief as opposed to like torturing her because mermaids are tough like that. I really like that twist.
Yeah, that was a good twist. It just they weren't in love. They just met and It was a little bit unbelievable to me that she would cry such tears of joy over this dude she just met.
You just haven't experienced true love.
God, apparently not.
Yeah.
Also, because he did that whole weird naming thing as well. Why is she into him? He's weird.
I mean, look, it's a Disney film, like Stockholm Syndrome. It's not new territory for them.
Literally, what's the two things he's done to her at this point is like, he just did the bare minimum to stop her from suffocating, which I would argue is not necessarily all that nice. It's like providing somebody their basic human right.
Oh, yeah, but, I mean, if he's the only one doing it.
Yeah, this is
that,
true.
That earns him points. And also, he carries her for a bit before this and, like, shirtless, which is bonus points.
He's surprisingly ripped for just this random missionary dude.
Yeah. Yeah, he lifts for a mission.
Like, everybody else in this movie spends all of their time on ships, like, pulling these heavy ropes and, like, doing all this, like, essentially working out their whole lives. And he just kind of, from what I can see, stands around. But for some reason, he's, like, twice as ripped as anyone else.
This is the backstory of this character, is actually he goes around seducing mermaids and then carrying them around shirtless a lot. So he's actually got a lot of, like, workouts where he's just carrying around mermaids. So that's why he's so rich.
Hey, you know what was a dumb twist? Was where it turned out that she had saved him or something in the cool mermaid scene.
I feel like that was a way to justify that.
Sure.
Yeah, I feel like that was them trying to justify why it's mutual and why it's not Stockholm, because they're basically saying, oh, no, see, she was into him first before all the weird shit happened, so it's legit love.
Which was weird because, like, all the mermaids were on, like, some kind of weird killing spree, but she just thought he was hot or something, so saved his life.
Well, maybe she's a mermaid missionary. Like,
I guess that's,
and that's why they're perfect.
Maybe implied.
How good would it have been if she was actually, like, a scary monster mermaid and they fell in love? Like, that would have been good. That would have been some good kind of Guillermo del Toro level shit that I would have been so here for. But instead they just made her like, oh, she's the one nice mermaid. And I'm like,
also, she can, for some reason, grow legs if she...
Can all mermaids do that?
Yeah, I was really confused. Guess too.
Why do they stay in the water if they can just go on land whenever they want?
Oh, no, sorry. If I could grow fins like that and swim in the water, I'd never fucking come to land.
But
like,
you eat humans, Elliot. Go on land, grab a human, drag them back to the water and eat them.
I don't think they eat exclusively humans because nobody normally lives here. Like,
that's true.
I reckon, like, you're talking about her being the one nice mermaid. They're probably all just nice. It's just every time humans show up,
hungry.
They fucking, like, kidnap them, torture them for tears. Like, of course they're pissy. Like, they're defending themselves because every time humans show up, they, like, attack them.
And unless they're really hungry, tears. Probably, because, like, what else? There's not that much else to eat. I guess fish.
Sure, they eat seafood.
I know, maybe they do eat. Yeah, okay, I hadn't thought of that. For some reason, I was thinking they could only eat things that lived on land. I was going, what do they eat? Birds? Like,
yeah.
They exclusively eat non-aquatic things. Yeah.
That makes sense evolutionary-wise, you know?
Yeah, let's bring evolution into mermaids. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
There's this one throwaway line, actually, speaking of, like, the origins of mermaids, where Philip sort of is looking at Serena and he sort of says, oh, surely you're not a descendant of those dark creatures who found no refuge on the Ark. And, like, I sort of call that out as, like, a really nice little piece of world building that, like, apparently a lot of the magic in this world is just shit that didn't make it on Noah's Ark. Like, especially in a world where you're going to have a missionary.
Again, the kind of faith subtext / themes that are running through this, again, lead to some really strong things, and I kind of wish they had lent into it a bit more.
Yeah. We'll get to some more of that later. But, yeah, the faith stuff, if they'd gone harder on it, it would have been even cooler.
Yeah. Because also it makes sense that the creatures who didn't make it onto the Ark would live in the ocean.
Yeah, true.
So that's why there's so many sea monsters, but there's not necessarily that much implication in this world of monsters on land.
Oh, well, they save that for kind of Indiana Jones of the Caribbean.
The crossover we've all been waiting for.
Quick aside, I saw news today, and I think this is about a week old now, so a lot of people probably already know this, but apparently there were plans for a Fast and Furious and Jurassic World crossover movie.
Yeah.
Which, like, I'm so down for that. Like,
no, the one that I'm really sad.
Who cares? They're both nonsense franchises at this point. Like, I just want to see dinosaurs riding missiles and shit. Like,
they were going to do for a bit 21 Jump Street and Men in Black crossover.
Yeah.
That
would have been so good.
I'm still mourning that one.
That would be really good.
That not going anywhere.
That's not there. Yeah.
I need to see Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum
as Men in Black. Can you imagine? That would be so fucking good.
And also, I want to see Will Smith and what's his face as just like two random cops handling drugs.
Yeah, Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones have to go undercover in a high school.
Tommy Lee Jones, who looks like he's about 200 years old.
You'd be like, what's that meme with Steve Buscemi?
How do you do? Hey, fellow kids, totally.
That would be so good.
It would work so well as a joke in the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Because that one came out during like the whole leaked emails in like 2014, right? Like that was...
Yeah, the big Sony leak, I think.
Yeah, and then it was like they like cancelled it because it came out during the leaks, and it was like, no. Everyone wants this now. Like, what are you talking about?
Someone do a you know,
petition.
Petition, that's the word.
Like, I think I'm on the Sam Raimi like memes thing on Reddit. If Tobey Maguire doesn't turn up in the new Spider-Man film, people are going to die. People are going to be so mad.
I mean, we just had the Nintendo Direct last night. And it's the same thing every year. Like, fans do this to themselves, where like everyone convinced themselves Breath of the Wild 2 was coming out this year, and then it comes up and they're like, yeah, we don't even have a title for it. It's like end of next year. And everyone's like acting shitty, like Nintendo fucked them over. And it's like,
yeah, they didn't say that. Yeah, you made up that.
Yeah.
Same with like Metro Prime 4. I was like, yeah, I could see that happening to this Spider-Man film. Is like, pop culture decided that Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire are in this new film, and now everyone's going to be shitty if it doesn't happen. And it's like, I feel sorry for the production crew if that's the case, because like, they were already making the movie when the shit started. Like, they can't just add them to the film unless it makes sense. Like,
mind you, they did do that with Tom Holland in Civil War. They whacked him in at like the last second, didn't they?
But I think they were planning to have it done. I think it was like, I think they had the idea to have him in, and they just like didn't commit to it until the last minute. But,
yeah, you know, you might be right. You're probably right, yeah.
Whereas like the whole thing with like this Spider-Verse nonsense is like, you can't just cram that in for 10 minutes. Just like, oh, for this one scene, the multiverse is in it, but now let's get back to like, you know, this high school shit. Like, that's not how.
You just have one scene where, so you don't even have to get Tobey Maguire, because you just have one scene where, I don't know, like something weird's happening, and then just like he comes on like dancing, like the da 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 in his little black suit. And it's just like this weird moment, and then it just vanishes.
That's the only time he's in the film.
Yeah.
Just to dance across the screen briefly.
Yeah. And Tom Holland's like, that was weird. And then he moves on.
What would be funny is if, like, everyone's hyped themselves up for, like, Spider-Verse stuff because of Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire being in the film. What if they're just, like, in it and they're just, like on a news panel talking about, like, Spider-Man or something? Like, they're just journalists in the thing.
Well, you know, it would be good if they were, like, Spider-Man fanboys who were like dressed as him.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be so good. Yeah.
That would be really
Spider-Man.
Good. Oh, you're so great. Oh, yeah. But in like their costumes from their films.
Oh, yeah. Their costumes. Yeah, they look like rip-off costumes, but it's just what they look like.
And they could criticize each other's costumes relative to Tom Holland's.
Yeah, that'd be really good.
Like, oh, you don't have the things that store the webs in yours. Oh, no, the webs just come out of his arms. That doesn't sound right.
Yeah, that's disgusting, yeah.
yeah, Disney, call us. So back to Pirates 4.
Boo. They
fine.
they get to the fountain, and honestly, the entrance to the fountain is cool as shit. There's all this water going upward stuff. There's like this crazy ceiling entrance you need to get sucked into. It's a shame it doesn't carry into the actual fountain inside itself, because it's cool as hell, but it's nice while it lasts.
I like how Jack kind of gets sucked up. And it's kind of like, yeah. Oh. And then next minute there's like 30 people just get sucked up all at once.
Bloop, bloop, bloop.
Which they conveniently don't show.
Yeah, but then later all the like Spanish and stuff, they're just kind of there, right? Like we don't see them get sucked up or anything.
Which they presumably do.
And it doesn't even look like the transition is a little bit funky, but it doesn't really look like they the same that it did when Jack or the others got sucked up. They just kind of walk out from the shadows behind the Fountain of Youth area.
Well, they could have been like secretly hopping up one at a time and like all stage their entrance.
Get sucked up and then they have to go hide.
Sneak around.
All right, go up there and then you hide.
No, it seems that that isn't the only entrance. Like, because first of all, there's just a crack in the roof to the outside of the forest. And then I'm pretty sure, what's his name, Philip, just kind of walks out later. So, like, it's like that weird Indiana Jones.
Yeah, true.
And the Uncharted series does this a lot as well, where you go through all this convoluted puzzle solving magic shit to get through the entrance to this like chamber, and then it turns out it just backs onto like a different part of the forest, and that's how the baddies got in. And it just always it just pisses me off every time a movie does it, because it's like, what was the point of this cool ass mystical entrance we did if there's just another one out back?
Hey, where's the bit where Serena grabs Philip and pulls him under the water? Is that here?
That's a bit later.
It's near the end.
Cool. Right.
Yeah. Because first we have the fight. But in this fight, Serena comes back and gives the cups to Jack.
Yeah.
Which is
nonsense.
It makes no sense. Like, okay, I've talked about a lot of things that don't make sense in this film, but at least most of them I can kind of understand, like, what they're trying to imply or whatever. But this one, it is so against effectively everything that Serena has been defined as in the film, for her to just come in and be like, here you go, take these cups so you can do this ritual with my tear. Like, and what's worse, it feels like she's kind of effectively been abused to get to this point, and then she's just like, oh, you know what, I forgive you.
Also, like really Johnny Depp wasn't slow. The one who, like, Jack Sparrow didn't actually, like, he wasn't really that involved in all the, but he also didn't ever do anything nice for her. Like, there's no reason why she would do him a favor.
I don't think they had a single conversation.
I don't think they'd interacted before that. So it didn't really. No. Yeah. Why did she choose to give them to him? It didn't make any sense.
She's seen him talk to Philip. That is as close as they get to like those two having any history that would justify her being like, use my tear wisely, like she does. Like it just, yeah, it's absolutely one of the top tier nonsense parts of this movie where it happens and you're like, why is she on Jack's side?
And I guess as opposed to some of the others are things that it's like, oh, maybe they just kind of forgot, or like, oh, maybe they kind of saw it and thought, was this one? It was just like they just did. It was obviously made no sense and nobody even tried to explain it. They just had to be like, oh, I don't know, don't waste my tear or something. And yeah, then they just didn't even try.
It's like one of those writing things where they had the cups down there and Jack needs the cups, and they're like, oh shit, we put them on the bottom of the water. Serena can give them to him. Like they wrote themselves into a box, and rather than like just not have the cups sink, apparently they thought this made more sense.
And there's like some intern being like, oh guys, I don't know if that makes any sense. And they're all like, yeah, whatever, shut up.
Shut up and get us coffee, Gerald. The rest of this fight is actually like pretty cool, because what happens is like they find the fountain, and then just as Blackbeard's about to do shit with it, Barbossa shows up and they fight. And then just as that's about to not go somewhere, then the Spanish just show up. And this is like the great moment where the Spanish are just sort of like, we actually don't want the fountain to get used. And they just like smash shit and leave.
That was cool.
And it's like a, I don't know. I can envision a version of the movie where this is like a really cool moment, because the way they've just been in the background the whole time and then they come in to just break shit is actually really awesome.
It was cool. It would have been cooler, again, if we'd seen a bit more of the Spanish and if we'd had a little bit more of the religious stuff maybe even put in, because I quite liked that.
Yeah, I agree.
I get that it's a sensitive topic in the US though, so maybe I don't like to dig into it too much, but
I don't know. It's like, you know, they're pirates. This isn't they're magical pirates. They can have religion, and it doesn't have to be a big deal. I don't know.
Because the thing that happens here, like the moment where I really realized the religious stuff should have been more of a theme, is Philip manages to escape from the Fountain of Youth, and he comes and he finds Serena and he unchains her, and she's basically like, hey, if you want to come down with me, all you have to do is ask. And he has this moment where basically he does it, and so he says like, oh, can you forgive me? And then she like drags him into the depths, and I was like, holy shit, like the imagery of like this Christian missionary asking someone for forgiveness and then them like sinking him underground. Like that feels like it's got to be really cool imagery, but I don't know what it's like. I don't think
yeah.
it actually is a thing. Like, yeah. I'm just trying to picture.
Could have been
like,
cool.
Yeah, I almost want to reverse engineer a whole arc for religion in this story from that, because I love that as like a mirroring of everything. Like, you know, forgiveness usually stands for in Christianity. It's just like, oh, like it could have been so cool, and it's
yeah
not for some reason.
And like the idea of this, yeah, like missionary, yeah, being dragged, like, and she's like this monster who didn't make it onto the ark or whatever. Like, she's essentially yeah. some kind of like demon or something. But he basically gets, yeah, just
like in so
dragged
many ways,
down.
She represents temptation. Like, there's so much free shit here they had to work with. And I feel like this is the point where I start to think maybe there's an original version of the script for this movie, which just does so much of the shit we've been talking about today much better, and they just had to chop the shit out of it for here, because I can't believe that it was an accident that the missionary ends things by being dragged underground after asking for forgiveness.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's like, it's actually genuinely really strong imagery that worked really well, and it's like a really nice, ambiguous ending. Like, you're not sure, is she saving him? Is she gonna eat him? Is she gonna like turn him into a merman? Like,
yeah,
it leaves it in a really nice ambiguous place with this beautiful image, but it just feels so out of place in this movie.
Mm-mm. Can't wait for him to come back in the next one, and then we get to find out what happened, right? come back as a merman.
Yeah. No, only one character makes it out of this movie, and it's Scrum. Nobody else that was introduced in this film survives.
That's a
shame. I think I'll get over it.
These two would have, like, Serena and Philip would have been great if they'd been done properly.
They'd actually given them, like, you know, personalities, might have helped. Yeah.
Especially Serena is hard done by in this film. She could have been like a really badass, monstrous.
She seriously kind of just sits there and looks pretty and lets Philip name her.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, obviously thematically in Pirates, Will's whole arc in the first and Elizabeth's was like being these kind of like gentle people who get, you know, who turn a bit rough as they interact with these pirates. And that's what's kind of happening to the missionary in this film with Blackbeard. But Serena could have also been another lens to examine that by being a monster who is kind of, you know, redeemed is maybe not the right word, but like humanized a bit more through this relationship, as Philip is like this goody two shoes who becomes a bit more rough around the edges. Like, that would have been great. And it just didn't, they just didn't do it.
Yep. Last shout out from this whole segment, Groves, Lieutenant Groves dies. He gets shot while waving the British flag.
Yeah.
You might be asking yourself, who is Groves?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
He's the helper guy. He was Barbossa's number two in this, and he was in the other films. He was the guy, we brought him up last month as like, he was Beckett's number two, and he'd been Norrington's number two in the first film. Like, he's
what?
The guy who's always standing behind the other ones. You'll recognize his face. But yeah, he's always the lieutenant, the second in command on the like British ships.
Oh, wow.
He's the one
who,
when Cutler Beckett is like
Theodore
in his death
Groves.
Scene, he's the one who's like, abandoned ship.
Yeah.
Well, and isn't so he the one who's like, who's always making those funny comments about Jack?
Yeah. He's the one who asked the question. Does he plan it all out or make it up as he goes along? And now we know the answer.
Mm.
And so
that's why he had to die. His purpose had been fulfilled.
His true purpose.
The prophecy has been completed.
It's time for me to go. Dies.
But full disclosure, I did not realize it was him who got shot holding the flag. I thought that was some random Brit. But then I like looked up Groves after recognizing him on the wiki, and it says he dies in this film because he gets shot waving the flag. And I was like, oh, fuck, that was him. Like,
yeah, sad.
This is a background character who's just like, he's so bland. You just always kind of recognize him. And I wish he'd had more memorable moments. Also, sorry, speaking of prophecies.
Yeah, there is a prophecy in this film. Can we not mention it? It's such, like, the prophecy that Blackbeard is given is like, a guy with one leg is going to kill you by this date. And it's mentioned, and it's not really, I don't know, it doesn't really make sense. Why is this a prophecy? Who prophesied this? Why are they so specific about the deadline for it? Well, who knows?
And does it actually come to?
Well, yeah, Barbossa kills him.
But does Barbossa kill him? Doesn't Johnny Depp kill him?
Well, the Fountain of Youth exists outside the prophecy, because they say that. It's like he says he knows he can't avoid getting stabbed. He basically wants to use the Fountain of Youth to get an extra life after getting stabbed.
That's true, yeah.
So he's never trying to avoid the prophecy. And yeah, Ruben, they say it was his quartermaster. Like, the guy sees the
future. That's right.
He made the prophecy.
Yeah.
Like, it, as far as prophecies go, I don't think it's the worst ever implemented one. It's just kind of like, I mean, this prophecy wouldn't have happened, but if that guy hadn't predicted it, the Queen Anne's Revenge wouldn't have gone. They wouldn't have run into
very Buffett, literally like, a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, yeah, you're right. Let's put that to bed.
I also want to point out that they go for a bit of a, you know, Wesley versus the Sicilian cup trickery scene here.
Oh yeah,
but it's just like it's very half-hearted. You kind of immediately know what's going on, and you're kind of like, all right, Jack, reveal that you've done the cup trick, and he does, and you're like, all right, we kind of knew this was going to happen. I think the moment lands, but it's really not a very complicated bit of trickery.
I don't think it's about us getting it, because I think you're right. I think everybody realizes pretty much instantly that he did not give them the cups that he told them that he did.
It's the way he delivers it was quite funny. Like, where he just turns around and goes, oh, actually, wait. I thought that was pretty good.
True. Yeah, that was a good reveal.
And it's the reaction from, like, Blackbeard and Angelica. Like, that's what that moment is kind of really about, is, like, the fact that he played them.
Which, again, like, I just don't get a character. Like, she's so upset that he's dying. It's like, he's done literally nothing ever for you.
You were plotting to kill him a little bit ago. At least, I think she was.
No, I think that was a trick. What's confusing is that she's so loyal to this father who she never knew. And
who seemed to really be willing to throw her away the entire time. Yeah. Like,
and
clearly.
She's supposed to be this like sort of smart, powerful female protagonist, but then she so obviously had like, you know, when she's like, you knew which, you know, which like when he pretended to like, or he was actually maybe going to shoot her, but she was like, you're just faking, right? And he's like, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
It's like really obvious he's lying.
Yeah, totally, I was. Yeah. And she's like,
she's
phew.
Like, yeah, of course. I'd never doubted you. And I was like, am I supposed to admire her because she's a fucking idiot?
Well, yeah,
It's
this confusing way they introduce her character because they're like, oh, yeah, she's a master manipulator and she's very clever. And then she essentially gets played by Blackbeard, who's not even trying.
She then spends the whole rest of the film being extremely gullible.
Like, I've been watching a lot of like Harley Quinn recently. Ruben recommended that to me.
I watch that on?
It's on binge.
It's on Amazon Prime.
Oh, is it?
Oh really?
Yeah. Sorry,
I'm actually pulling it up.
But yeah, like very, very good show. Fully recommend it. But like, yeah, it like. Honestly, much more often, Angelica felt like I was watching a Harley Quinn character where I think they want her to be a Poison Ivy or someone. She's just a bit of a like idiot who's getting played by people, but they don't seem to recognize that in the way she's characterized in other parts.
Yeah, it's like they keep forgetting who she actually is or what her whole point of her character is or who she is.
Mm.
I realized we didn't talk about that scene where they... the diving into the ravine scene. Can we touch on that for a bit? Because I want to just confirm if you all had the same experience where, so the setup for this scene is, oh, we need to get the cups there across this ravine. The bridge is broken. So someone's going to need to try and jump the ravine. And it's obviously, they're talking about, oh, it's so dangerous. And then Jack ends up doing it after a really long, convoluted setup, which took forever. Jack jumps in. And I swear to God, I had thought that they were talking about trying to jump over the ravine, but then Jack just jumps in. Did anyone else think that they were going to try and jump over it? Because I didn't really understand. Surely jumping into a ravine when you're trying to get across it is, like, not going to save you any time.
He also jumped, like, 1 millimeter away from a bunch of rocks. I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, he threaded the needle. Now, I never thought they were going to be jumping over it because that was just too far to jump.
Mm.
But I will... I 100% shared your confusion about why jumping into it was at all part of the plan.
Yeah.
Can I be honest with you guys again?
Did you not? Did you forget this?
Wasn't
scene?
Concentrating enough to realize that didn't make any sense. And so, I didn't even. I just watched him jump off the thing and thought it's a lot of rocks down there. I was barely paying attention at that point.
Yeah. It's kind of sold as, oh, this will be faster, and I just can't believe that that's true.
Yeah, no, it really doesn't. Because, like, how it doesn't get him where he wants to go. It makes no sense.
Yeah. 100%. Anyway, so Jack leaves Angelica on, like, a deserted island. He does, like, the whole routine from the first couple of movies where you leave someone on the island with a single bullet. It's pretty funny that
hated it because it reminds me that this is somehow connected to the three films, which I quite liked.
and then Jack leaves her there, and she fires her shot and misses. I did like that moment.
Yeah.
And then we find out he reunites with Gibbs, who had sort of mysteriously disappeared earlier in the movie. And it turns out, it's because he was working with Jack to steal all of the, yeah, I don't think we ever talked about this. Blackbeard has all the ships he's ever beaten stored in little magical bottles. So they're like bottled versions of all the ships.
Cool. And, another cool thing that existed.
Yeah, that was great. And Gibbs has stolen all of those. So now him and Jack have like an entire fleet of ships. And meanwhile, Barbossa
can't wait for that to come back in the next film.
Yeah.
And there's this great line where Gibbs says, looks like now we've got a fleet, and he swings around this huge bag and the penny drops for all the audience. Oh, shit, they've got all the bottles. They didn't just get the black pearl. And you're like, oh, this is great. And then in my fantasy movie, it cuts to black there and that's the end of the film. It would have been a great ending. But instead...
There's a bunch of other changes in the whole movie.
Because what happens is...
Yeah. It's like 5 more minutes of Jack Sparrow monologuing.
And he finishes, like, this is my favorite part, is the final line of the film is Jack basically jimming the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, it's a pirate's life for me, savvy. And I just...
It stuck out so bad. I had exactly the same nonsense. Thought. I was like, it just did not sound at all organic. It was... so contrived.
It's just, I'm trying not to let this be just a making fun of bad movies podcast, but like, fuck, this movie makes it difficult when it has such bright moments and then it ends on this. Like, it hurts.
I think I did a little, I was like, ugh.
Also, can we just talk about, like, we haven't really mentioned it, but like, so Gibbs is in this film and he does this thing at the end with Jack and they're sort of partners in crime again. And I feel bad for Gibbs because Jack just treats him like shit for this whole movie, like in a much more mean-spirited way than before.
Which again, I guess it's, I'm not clear on whether that's all contrived, right? Like, is it that they constantly have this thing? Because, you know, he basically convinces Blackbeard to let Gibbs go, sort of saying, oh, you know, let him go. I don't really give a shit about him, but just let him go because I feel like I've been mean to him. And so is it all like this, like they're trying to make everybody think that they're never working together so that nobody will ever think that they're working together, but they're actually always on the same page?
I'm going to headcanon that the answer to that question is, like, yes, they are doing that, just because then it lets me believe that Gibbs is working for Jack for any other reason than, like, just another case of Stockholm in this movie.
It kind of makes sense because, you know, like with that one, and Gibbs does the whole act of being all like, I've got to handle this pig, oh, I'm letting the pig go, and then... oh, you know, no, Jack, you're treating me like shit. But then he just, and what, can't I stay with you? Oh, I guess I'm just off on my own. But then Jack gives him his compass, which is like his most prized possession. And then they meet up like it was all planned. So I guess I assumed that it was always just an act.
Yeah.
And that they're actually friends.
Yeah. I'm going to headcanon that. I don't care if it's true or not. It is now. So the other part of the ending that we haven't yet touched on is that Barbossa has this nice moment where he claims the Queen Anne's revenge because he killed Blackbeard, and he gets to use the sword to make everyone fall over. And also he gets a motherfucking bandana, Will Turner style.
What is with that? Why do they, what is this with their men bandanas in these films? That's like, is it a thing if you become the captain of a new ship that you have to get a bandana?
I mean, it must be, because that's what keeps happening.
Can I say, this is a scene where you just realize the difference between like some random actor and like a really good actor, like Jeffrey Rush, just like going onto this new ship. He just spends he looks so happy with himself, and then he uses his sword to like, and the look on his face, it's just like Barbossa is actually a real person. Like, he just is such a good actor.
Yeah.
I just really noticed it in that scene because it was just all really subtle. Like, he didn't really say anything, but you could tell exactly what was going through Barbossa's head. Like, he's just there like, fuck, yes, look at me. I've got this cool power that really freaked me out, and now it's mine. And
yeah.
Anyway.
Like, that's the thing. Like, again, Jeffrey Rush is putting this backstory into the character that the movie just doesn't really ever deliver on.
Yeah.
Like, he's carrying our hopes and dreams for this making sense. But yeah, so then we have a quick after credit scene where the voodoo doll of Jack.
Didn't know that existed.
Yeah, they all have after credit scenes.
It doesn't sound like I miss much.
Voodoo doll that we haven't talked about on here, but like Blackbeard kept making it and poking the voodoo doll Jack.
Maybe I never was concentrating enough to see that. I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm gonna have to Google it.
Anyway, there's an after credit scene where that doll washes up on Angelica's island somehow, and she like grins at it, and guess we'll see if that's relevant in the next film.
Nope. Can't wait to see that payoff.
She doesn't come back, so it's not.
I looked up Jack Sparrow voodoo doll. Here it is.
Ruben, I can't believe you spoiled the next movie for yourself like this.
Okay. All right, whatever.
Hey, apparently this voodoo doll appears in Dead Man's Chest.
Oh, does it?
Wait, what? That can't be right. No, it's only created in this.
Everyone stop wikiing the movies we haven't got to yet.
Dead Man's Chest is the second film. Hold on.
It says theatrical posters featured a voodoo doll resembling Jack Sparrow. The doll would also hang as one of the dangles seen on the film's skull logo. But sorry, it wasn't actually in the film.
Right.
And so in my defense, the fifth movie is called Dead Men Tell Murder Tales. They both start with dead. I'm sorry.
Dead Man's and Dead Men. So
yeah,
pretty close.
Now, Ruben, I see you have a series of fun facts.
Oh, yeah. I just had some fun facts. I already pulled out the one about Pintel and Rigetti, but here's another one. So this is from, like, novel stuff and just, like, Wikipedia diving. Here's one. Although Tim Powers stated, who's one of the writers, I think. Oh, no, he's the director.
He was the novel author.
Oh, the novel writer. Yep, cool. Okay. Although Tim Powers stated mermaids were not in the novel, there was a brief reference to succubies and... Well, I'll finish the quote and then I'll explain how that's spelled. Yeah. Succubies, as female demons that weirdly and erotically occupied the last hours of men marooned on barren islands. And I just want to spell it.
Because succubies is very good.
It's very, very good. Suck, the word suck, S-U-C-K dash Y-O-U dash B-Y-E-S. Suck you buys. It's just a great play on succubi, but... It's just like a weird spelling that makes so much sense. I just thought that was very funny.
Yeah, that is a very good pun.
And then also, there was originally thoughts that Gore Verbinski would return to direct this film because he was working on a different film previously, which was put on hold, which was a Bioshock film adaptation, which I guess never, you know, ended up just getting shelved. But that's wild.
Yeah, because I remember being super hyped from that because that was you know,
when that'd be like a good movie,
19 or something. I remember they're like making a Bioshock film, and I was very excited, and it never went anywhere. But my question is, so why didn't Gore Verbinski come back?
Yeah, I don't know
if Bioshock was shelved, like because I don't know. I'd be interested to see the Gore Verbinski version of this film to like understand how much is the script and how much is the director in how like the quality of all this coming together.
I think I really do suspect if Gore Verbinski came back for this, it would have been very, very good. I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah. Well, we'll never know now.
Yeah. And that's so that.
Final thoughts on Pirates 4 on Stranger Tides?
What's my thoughts?
10 out of 10.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Do we have any?
That's that.
I forgot to put in the notes here. Do we want to talk about any of that shit like The Bad Batch or anything?
I mean, it's still mid-season.
Yeah, okay.
I'm also like 2 episodes behind or something.
Oh, okay.
I think, yeah, maybe.
It's still good. I'm enjoying it. I just started
Loki. I'm liking it.
As well.
Which one?
Loki.
Oh, I'm saving it up until there's a few episodes.
Second episode came out today. I haven't watched it yet. But first episode was pretty good.
I didn't like the first episode, but I really liked the second.
Oh, I feel like with these like Marvel TV shows, often the first couple of episodes are quite like quite a lot of sort of setup, and it takes a little while to warm up. So I thought with Loki, I was like, well, I'm just going to wait till there's like 3 or 4 out and then binge them. Because that's what I did for Winter Soldier and Falcon and Winter Soldier, and I thought that was better than, whereas WandaVision, I was like, what?
Yeah. I just didn't like the first half of WandaVision because it was all referencing stuff I hadn't watched. So, like, I could appreciate it a bit, but, like, it just didn't connect with me. Like, in the same way as the later ones did, where they were referencing shows I'd seen.
Yeah. I guess because the stories move slower too, and I'm, like, impatient person. So, I prefer to just watch, like, the whole first half of the season and get, like, half the plot in one go and then watch it week to week.
That's why I'm a really big fan of this new Amazon TV structure where they release the first 3 episodes at once and then they go weekly from there.
I
hope everyone switches to that. It's my new favorite,
because that's essentially what I'm doing, is basically saving up until I've got 3 or 4 episodes that I can binge and then week to week. Or like Bad Batch did, instead of doing that, they had their first episode was like a double length or a bit more. It was nearly triple length, wasn't it? Yes, they essentially did the same thing, right? They sort of released like 3 episodes so that you can get over all the exposition and then go week to week, because it's really annoying when you're still doing exposition and it's week to week, because you come back the next week, you're like, oh, I can't really remember what the premise was yet, because it was only half established.
Cool. Well, I guess that's the end of the What Are We Watching Right Now segment.
Yep, that classic segment. Well, then that's the end of the episode. So as we always say,
3, 2... 1.
Bye, listeners.
Oh, wow. Honestly, actually, if you go back and listen to the one from last month's episode, I didn't edit the timing on that. That is actually how well it turned out.
Oh, we didn't edit the timing on this one either.
Oh, no, I'm not editing the timing on any of them.
good.
But, like, last month's, because, like, we obviously hear it with the delay being on the call here, so it sounded as terrible as normal. Somehow last month's was miraculously close to being.
Damn.
Could you just edit that one onto this one so people think we're really good?
Keep using it. Okay. Yeah. So thanks to
Bye Hoy.
It'll never not be funny. God, what funny. I'm still laughing. Okay, I'm back.
All right, cool. See you all next month for the final Pirates film.
Can't wait.
Bye. Na 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 na
going.